This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you. Shopify is a global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real life store stage, all the way to the, hey Marge, did we just hit a million orders stage? Shopify is there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Running a growing business means getting the insights you need wherever you are. With Shopify's single dashboard, you can manage orders, shipping, and payments from anywhere. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the United States, and Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/ifanboy, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/ifanboy now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/ifanboy.
This is iFanboy number 628, brought to you by Harry's. Go to harrys.com/iFanboy for your trial shave set. And iFanboy listeners like you. Welcome to iFanboy Pick of the Week number 628. I am Josh Flanagan. That's right. That sound you hear is everybody else. There's nobody. It's just me. I'm doing a solo show again. I know. I don't know if it's a good idea either. But you're listening and I'm already talking. So let's see what happens. iFanboy is our podcast / website entity where we, normally others also, read a stack of comics, pick the favorite book. Call that the pick of the week. We'll talk about that book, other books from the week. We're going to talk about a patron pick. All will be explained. And we'll read some listener mail and do what we can and see what's going on, right? Okay, cool. The idea is it's fun. We are going to talk. I said we. That's not correct. There's going to be mistakes. There will be mistakes. There's a spoiler warning. We're going to talk about, I said it again, what happens. They're not viewers. We're going to talk about what happens in the books. So if you haven't read the books, listening to this is your own fault. And you should know better. And I don't want to hear your sass. There it is. This week, I have the pick. I mean, it's not really a lot of other options, are there? Pick of the week this week goes to Analog number 1. This is a new series from Image Comics, written by Jerry Duggan with art by David O'Sullivan, colors by Jordi Belair. And it's just her consistency that's a problem. She doesn't do a lot of work, and when she does, it is all over the map. That's sarcasm. And normally sarcasm is denoted by my co-host who would laugh at that, which would tell the people at home, oh, he's making a joke. Jordi Belair does a lot of work and it's always very good, to the point that it's hard to even talk about anymore. Letters by Joe Sabino. He's all right too. So what we have here is a sort of basically like a near future, I guess, spy story. He's not really a spy, but there's some sort of black ops thing going on about this guy. He is in St. Louis trying to deliver a case, some armed toughs. Everybody here who's supposed to be tough has a trench coat. That's how you can tell they're tough. And a couple of them have the hats, like hoods. Not a hood that you put on your head, like a hood, like a mob felon kind of thing. Anyway, he's in St. Louis. He doesn't want to die in St. Louis, doesn't like St. Louis, got a problem with St. Louis. Listen, I'm agnostic on St. Louis. I don't want to move there. If you live there, I'm sure there are many wonderful things. You have a specific style of barbecue, I believe. Anyway, as delivering this case, he asks the armed thugs, do you have the password? And they're like, they don't have the password. Then a gunfight ensues, and the main dude says, I've got a sniper up there, and if you do the wrong thing, they're going to kill you, and you're not sure, and they're not sure if he's bluffing or not. But he's not, and then all the people get killed. So he he finishes the job, and he's a tough guy. Like, it's like a private eye, you know, tough guy kind of thing. Then we find out that the backstory is that we are in the year 2025, and the internet gave up all of its secrets in 2020. And this main character dude is part of why that happened. He used to be a tech worker in Silicon Valley. And now everybody knows everything that anybody's ever looked for, done, searched for, sent. Everybody's stuff has been hacked and leaked. And all of your secrets, for those of you who put them on the internet, are out there. People's lives are ruined. And it's weird because at first you don't know that this is taking place in the future. This could be sort of any time. This could be, you know, a Darwin cookbook from the 60s. Or this could be, that's kind of what it feels like at first anyway. Or now, but it's sort of the near future. But right as you get back into the world, you see there's sort of self-driving cars and there's drones flying over the place. And I don't know, it's kind of interesting. Basically, there is a hook there. It's not just a straight up spy adventure or whatever story. There's a social element, meaning we're examining society. We're checking what things happened. And I like that, but it's not supernatural. Nobody's a demon. Nobody's like that. It's trying to tell a kind of thing that I think I wasn't expecting. Part of it is because I knew about this as a thing. It came out faster than I thought, put it in my inbox. And as I was reading it, I really started to get into it. He goes to visit his father in Queens and there's a weird relationship there. And it's all sort of very fun and entertaining. Jerry Duggan's a super entertaining writer. He does great dialogue. He's been handling, you know, Deadpool for forever. And I really dug it. I guess it was just different than the other stuff that I was reading this week. And I read a lot of pretty good books, but nothing that really stood out. I was like, well, this could be a pick of the week for this, and this could be a pick of the week for that. But none of them are really like a thing that I feel like you definitely have to go check out. And that was, you know, the best thing I happened. And this is my best choice of it. So I want people to check it out. I liked the David O'Sullivan art a lot. I don't know who that is, but he's got a nice sort of blocky, cartoony quality that I like. I think he really treaded that line between doing something that's sort of gritty and familiar, but also doing this sort of near future that's just a little bit different that we notice. And I really like some of the social commentary in it. I think was a little on the nose, but some of it is still a conversation I think that we're very interested in having, and we should be having. And it's, you know, about how much tech and social media and our, just how much of ourselves we put in the cloud and whether that's good or not. And we never really stop to ask that. And then what that would mean, when and if everything blows up as it's going to. So I liked this first issue. It went by very fast. At the end, I was like, oh, I would like more of this. So I guess I'll have to read it next week. And I think that you should read it next week too. I would like to know Connor's thoughts on it just as much as you would, but he's not here right now because, well, I can't say. It's like a spy thing. That's not true. So here's what I'm going to do different this week than most weeks, if you've been paying attention. I'm going to talk about every single book that I read in some way. It may not be a lot. It may be interesting. It may be uninteresting, but I'm going to make a comment to one degree or another, and every single thing that I read this week. No bell. We'll see how this goes. All right, so first up, we've got Black Bolt number 12. Now, I know that historically, in the past, I've had a problem telling you that a series is ending, but it says, and then the next, there would be then an issue 13, and they'd be like, you guys are wrong, because we're frequently wrong. This has been 12 issues. It says at the end, this is the last one, which sucks, but also, that's fine. 12 issues is a good run, and it didn't get a chance to get bad. Black Bolt number 12 by Saladin Ahmed and Christian Ward. Basically, Black Bolt was put in the space prison, met some other people, really good Absorbing Man story. There's this character named Blinky who's like a, seems like a kid, but it kind of isn't a kid, but has massive psychic power. Absorbing Man dies. Black Bolt comes back, hangs out with his girlfriend. Is it Titania? I don't know. Now when I used to ask those questions, somebody would answer it, but now I can't. She's a strong bad guy lady. And everybody's sort of, like, the bad guys in this aren't quite as bad guys, which is kind of interesting. And this is the end of it. Basically, the prison jailer person, demon powerful thing, takes over Blinky, and there's way too much power in there, and it's super dangerous. Absorbing Man comes back from the dead, which is nice, because he's got an absorbing quality, I guess, that makes that possible. But also, we deal with, like, a ton of stuff, because Black Bolt's son, Uhura, shows up, and there's really some sort of... That's been a rough relationship for a very long time in the comics, and it actually feels like they make some progress here. Sort of in moving along, progressing his characters and things like that, which I think is nice since so much sort of stays where it is. And then we see some flashbacks to Black Bolt's youth, where his dad was, you know, they had to put him in like a room and so that he wouldn't destroy the whole world with his voice. And we see that he was not the best dad. And it was all pretty interesting. Saladin Ahmed's writing has been super strong on this. We talked about the fact that he's not a comic book writer originally, but boy, he really picked it up really strongly. Christian Ward, a really different and interesting comic book writer or artist. It works really well for this. It looks like he's going to be on Thor with Jason Aaron on Thor number one. That'll be the next thing he does in June, which is it's quite a step up, I think. And I don't know. I don't know if it's right for Thor. I can kind of see it. It's got a very, very digital sort of coloring style to it, which I don't love, but I think overall it's a really nice aesthetic that works for me. It's a great book. I would like to see the Inhumans, Black Bolt, Medusa continue in this framework, meaning sort of the way that the characters were portrayed and the way that their relationships are. This is what I always liked about the Inhumans, as opposed to a lot of the different stuff that's been going on. Not that that stuff was bad stories, but I just prefer this sort of characterization of Black Bolt and the Inhumans family that was in this. This is a really great 12 issues, and I guess Saladin Ahmed's going to come back and do something else at some point, and when he does, you should check it out. Apparently there will be more of him somewhere. Oh no, wait, Saladin is doing Exiles number 1 written by Saladin Ahmed and drawn by Javier Rodriguez, which will be next week. So there you go. That's what he's doing next. I never read Exiles. That was a Judd Winnick series, I believe. Maybe that was a thing. Marvel, 2-in-1 number 5. We've got, this is sort of the, almost like the run-up to Fantastic Four. I think there was an announcement, because comics can't help ruin everything, that Fantastic Four will be coming back, so there's no surprises. So I'm guessing at the end of this, maybe the Fantastic Four will come back, but this is Ben Grimm and Johnny Storm traveling to different universes. I think I missed the last issue of this. I wasn't aware that I did, but something happened in the meantime. They go to some other world where there's another Reed Richards who's been sort of mentally defeated and has no gumption left anymore, because that universe's Doctor Doom merged with Galactus. And so basically he lost. And this is about this Reed trying to get his groove back, and Sue is here alive in this one, but she works for S.H.I.E.L.D. in there, and her and Reed have split up, and it's good character stuff, and it's fun. It's no longer Jim Chung drawing it, which would be amazing. It's Valerio Sheety drew it. I think he did a very good job. He's not Jim Chung, but it's a good looking comic book. And it's they get a chance to write these characters who are the characters you know, but out of the context of all the stuff that's holding them down. You find that Norrin Rad is a farmer who's exiled himself somewhere on this world and is a sad, broken down farmer. And then Johnny Storm and Ben Grimm approach apparently from the middle of a wheat field, which is a weird place to approach from. A lot of people would use a road, but they come from the middle of a wheat field. You know, I'm not a huge Fantastic Four fan, but absence does make the heart grow fonder. I feel like for like 15 years, every time they relaunch Fantastic Four, I'm like, I'm going to give this one a shot. And then I read it for a little while and then I find I'm not interested. So I like it in small chunks. And this is a small chunk. We're getting them in here. There's a lot going on. And it's been a good series. Chip Zdarsky has shown a side of himself that I was not previously aware of, and how he's writing this. He was writing Doom weird before. This Doom is a little more spot on. This is good stuff. Actually, there's some really nice art in here. I take it back. Some good Mr. Fantastic stuff. I think you should be reading this series. That's what I think. Let us move along. This is all Marvel, apparently. I'm moving along to Run. I didn't put these in any order. This is completely random. Runaways, number 8. This one is written by Rainbow Roll. Rainbow? I'm guessing that's not her real name. And it's drawn by Chris Anka, as have the previous 7 issues and the one that comes after this. This is still good. I really like it. I feel like this is... trying to remember, but I feel like this is the closest to what the Runaways should be after the initial series. Doom shows up in this too, although this Doom is completely wrong. It's the wrong Doom. He's got like a green suit, like a double-breasted giant jacket, like a zoot suit basically, and spats, and he's got his old hood and cape, and he's not Iron Man at all in this. So I don't know why he's like this, and he speaks like Doom, but they kind of say that he's a good guy in it now. So it's not the same one that Bendis is doing, but he's coming for Victor Mancha's head, and that's his mission there. They get attacked by Doom, and there's this whole thing where, like, we're not good enough to take on Doom. And then there's a girl who was in Power Pack, and she's dating the other girl, the other pretty blonde, long-haired girl. They both look the same, unfortunately. It was fun. It was entertaining. I really like this series. It's been good, and I think each issue's gotten better as we sort of get used to being in that world. Another non-comic writer who did like a good job making it seem like they know how to read comics. Next up is Spider-Man number 239, which is a series I frequently forget to read because they call it Spider-Man, and I think it's one of the Spider-Man ones I'm not reading. But this is Bendis's Miles Morales Spider-Man, but he's in our world, and he's recently met his... uncle, who is like an Iron Spider, but he's a bad guy, and they had a big sort of blowout. And then in the old book, he got killed, but now he's back alive because everybody's back alive. And Miles thinks, oh, that's probably because the worlds came together, and that's the most explanation we're going to get, which is fine. I'm tired of them killing characters just to bring them back. Like, if you can't think of a better thing to do than kill them, then don't. It seems lazy. But I guess it's also just routine. Like, that's a thing that they do, and so it's accepted. But I don't know. It means there's no impact. So then you're doing this thing that doesn't matter at all. Anyway, didn't Miles Morales sort of, like, say he was going to quit being Spider-Man? Is that a thing that happened, I think, in Spider-Men? But then this is... maybe this is behind, because this was being drawn by somebody else for a while, but now it's Oscar Basaldúa, I think, is the name. I don't know. It's pretty fun because it's Bendis writing his Spider-Man. He's going up against this new Sinister Six as they try to steal a helicarrier. It's not anything amazing. It almost feels like other than the dialogue being exactly correct and, you know, fun like Bendis dialogue is, it almost feels like this is what somebody who was pretty good did to take over after Bendis gave it up. But Bendis still wrote this one, so I don't know. It's fine. It looks fine. It's fine. I guess that's a thing. We are going to go now to Astro City. And you're thinking, oh, good, they're going to talk about Astro City again. This is a second part of a 3-part story of this guy who holds a sort of support group for people who have had their lives negatively impacted or lost somebody to superhero and supervillain tomfoolery. This is the original team. You've got Busick on art. I keep doing that. Why do I mix up art and story? I don't know. I guess that's the thing I need Connor for, because otherwise I get these things mixed up, like King Arthur in 3 and 5 and the Holy Grail. I can make old references that only old nerds understand. Maybe newer nerds understand that. I don't really know. Kurt Busick, Brent Anderson... this guy has some mystery going on, and so some lady at the group says, I looked you up, and there is no record of you having a wife, you're this person or whatever, and it turns out that this guy is sort of the victim of some timeline tomfoolery that had been going on with the Chrono Wars? Chrono Crisis, it was called. And so maybe he was vaguely, like he in another life, in another plane that he was sort of related in, the people... he had a different life, and he had this wife, and she's gone. But then in another one, he had a different version of it. And what's interesting is that you've got all these people who are pouring their souls out to him about stuff that's happened to superhumans, and they lost somebody. And then he tells them, well, actually, my thing is a little more complicated because it's all this time stuff and dimensions and everything. And they just totally don't believe him. And they live in a world where people fly around and have superpowers all the time. It feels like they would accept that. And I guess in Astro City world, the bridge too far is the one when you're talking about other dimensions and worlds, which I think is interesting, but I guess it's realistic. It was an Astro City issue. It was fun. It was a middle one where they kind of explained a lot of things. And then we would, you know, move on to the next one, which I think is the last issue. I think the next, it's there I go again. Yeah, this is 51, so of course 52. And let's pause here and note that Kurt Busiek wrote 52 issues of this in a row from Vertigo. I know I've said that, but it keeps getting impressive. It keeps getting more impressive to me, because if you remember the old days, they were not frequent. They did not come out all the time, and this is a gift and a joy. Next up, we have Batman number 44. Tom King, Mikael Janin, I don't know him. I don't know how to say it. So there it is. When we first started doing the podcast, like, nobody outside of pro circles knew how to say anybody's name. So, there wasn't people talking about it. So we would just sort of read it, and that's how everybody'd assume. That's why nobody can still figure out how to say Mark Miller's name. And I remember that we were calling Paul Dini. And a friend of mine who was a pro was like, oh, it's so wrong. And I was like, how would we know? There was no way to know that. And also, Denny and Deanie are pretty close. And that guy was kind of a jerk. But anyway, he's not that bad. But I don't know how to pronounce I don't know. There's the way to do it. But we don't know. Somebody must know. But either way, he drew this, is the point. I know that we talk about these Batman issues a lot because they're often very interesting and it's been very good. I'll be honest with you. I don't know that this issue was all that great. It's kind of a story where you're watching flashbacks to the history of their relationship, Batman and Catwoman. I'm having some transposition issues today. I could edit it out, but I believe I owe it to you to be honest about that. Batman and Catwoman, we're having flashbacks to interactions they've had in the past, all the while we're watching Catwoman, I think it's going backwards in time. Yes, it is. Breaking into a dress shop with a bomb to try on wedding dresses and do the whole thing. I like that part that she's still doing. She's a thief, so she's still. But I was bothered by it because I was like, well, they're trying to run a store and she's blowing up their floor and she's marrying Bruce Wayne and it's not necessary. But it does fit the character. But at the end of the day, I don't know that this was necessary to spend this much time doing. She comes, she gets a dress, she comes back home, she goes to bed. Batman is sacked out at 7:40 a.m., which I was like, well, is that right? Would he be back by then? Would he have just gone to bed, or did he take a night off? Does he completely trust her, and now she can get away with anything? These are some interesting questions. So story-wise, I don't know that I got a lot out of it. Technique-wise, it was kind of interesting, but I don't think I was blown away. Art-wise, Janine or Janin, whoever the hell he is, he can draw really well, and he's kind of the right guy for this. He draws a sexy lady Catwoman. It's how it is. And I like the sort of shapes of his figures, even though his men tend to look a lot alike one another, I guess. Especially if they're at a rock party where Alfred is drumming. Why would Alfred be drumming? First of all, if you've had your hand reattached, is that even safe? Because I had surgery on my wrist, 4 months ago, and I can't do anything with it still. Okay, not anything, but there's still impact-related things. Seems to be a problem. That's what people showed up for. Me talking about impact-related wrist injuries. There are some really beautiful drawings in this. There are absolutely beautiful drawings in this. And nice acting. But, you know, here's the thing. I don't like to use the word filler, but I'm going to use the word filler. I don't know what this taught me. Moving along to Batman White Knight. Now, the thing about Batman and Knight is, when you are writing a script for a comic book program like this, you always have to look and say whether they mean Knight, K-N-I-G-H-T, or just N-I-G-H-T, because with Batman, it can go either way, and I find that to be a problem. This isn't a thing that you're going to have to worry about unless you're in the copy editing realm, the superhero copy editing realm, but it's a thing that happens a lot. I thought, for some reason, in my head, that Sean Murphy's last, his series here was over, but apparently that's not the case. In this one, They're going after New Joker, NU-Joker, which I missed the part where they started calling her that. She's the other, she's second Harley, I guess. And Napier starts reverting back to the Joker off and on through the whole thing. And it's a nice visual and it looks really cool. I don't know. I don't think I love that. I really like the way this looks. The interesting thing is, like, basically the reason for what they're doing is that they're going after New Joker, and they say the last thing that she'll expect is that Batman will work with Joker. And it's exactly the same thing that they said at the end of Metal, Dark Knight's Metal, which was NIGHT, I believe. It's exactly the same strategy that they employed there. Like, oh, that new Joker also would not expect a Batman to work with Joker. And I know that Scott Snyder and Sean Murphy are friends, so I feel like they would have talked about something like that. And it's kind of weird to be at the end like, oh, we had the same exact pivot point in both of our books, and that's weird. The point is, they drive Batmobiles around. There's a bunch of them. And Sean Murphy draws great Batmobiles, especially from the back. There's the one that he draws, like the main Batmobile in here, which when you see from the back, looks like an old Corvette sort of mixed with a Ferrari. And it's really cool looking. And I guess Batman was right all along. And all of our suspicions were correct that this Jack Napier would become Joker again. I know you're all shocked that is the gun that had to go off, but it did. I think this whole thing is a really interesting place to play around in. I think it tends to be only surface deep, and so you're not getting a lot of extra stuff out of it. If you want to be sort of wowed by what you're looking at and sort of shocking moments that don't really mean a lot, I think this is really good for that. You come to this for the art, and I'm sure that that's not a thing that Sean Murphy wants to be told. He wants to be, oh, this is a great story, but there is a spectacle of it, I think, that is very good and very valuable and interesting. But it's not really saying anything new about Batman, although that's probably one of the hardest things in the world that you could do right now. Finally, not finally, because I'm not done talking about comics, but I'm done with this batch of comics. We have it's not Snagglepuss. It's Exit Stage Left, : The Snagglepuss Chronicles, by Mark Russell, who you may remember as our fan favorite writer, and when he was doing the Flintstones. And then they announced this thing, which he's drawing. Mike Feehan is drawing. I don't even know who that is. I've never heard of that person. And this is the strangest book in the world, and I have no idea who it's for. It has Snagglepuss, the old Hanna-Barbera cartoon pink lion, as a closeted gay playwright in the 50s or 60s, it doesn't matter. And Huckleberry Hound is there, and they have a past, and people are constantly threatening to out him, and it's good. I'm sorry, I don't know if I made that clear. Like, I got to the end. This was nearly pick of the week, although it confounds me so that I don't think I could have made that leap. And I think that there are about seven people. Like, it's really, it's mixing some weird friggin' things. Why is this a thing? This is sort of a really heartbreaking thing where there's a gay bar in downtown New York and the cops are bribed to let it be. And one of the cops, who's this horse guy, who takes his bribes, turns out to be closeted, and he starts a love affair with Huckleberry Hound. And then they say, nope, you got to raid the place. And so he goes in and he bashes Huckleberry on the face. And he uses the F word, the bad F word, not fuck, the other one that I'm actually not going to say. And it's sort of striking. It is literally striking, but it really has an impact about what things were like and how people had to hide who they were and live this double life up until very, very, very recently, and in some cases still today. And all of that is poignant and meaningful, but why is it mixed with these anthropomorphic animals who don't wear pants? It's so strange. I don't actually want Mark Russell to end up being pigeonholed into this area where he only does these super serious social commentaries that are also stupid and ridiculous. That being said, what a strange experiment, and It's really something. I don't know what that thing is that it is, but it really is something. And at first I was like, I don't know. And now I get what it is, and it does have an impact. But man, it's weird. It's so weird. Like, it's hard to wrap your head around. Maybe that's the value of it, is that you start thinking of these concepts that you've been shown a million times, but sort of in this context, it's just so strange that you get it from a slightly different view, or you're able to think about it differently. The important thing is that in this issue, Snagglepuss actually says that he prefers to exit stage left. He does not say even, in what must have been a very difficult move for the writer. But he says, I've never been one for goodbyes, Huck. I've always preferred to merely exit stage left, which is A, the title of the book, but B, you know, also his catchphrase, which would be even. But he said it. He said the catchphrase, and that's really what we all showed up for. None of this stuff about how gays were being targeted and marginalized. No. We came to see the cartoon lion say the catchphrase that none of us watched, by the way. I mean, like, you'd watched it when you were a kid, but, like, you didn't... Very few people listening to this were actually around when this was current. Snagglepuss, I mean. That would make you quite old. So, yeah, why is this? Why is this a thing? Let's talk about the shaving, shall we? I'm going to talk about Harry's real quick. I'm not going to go on for 7 minutes like we have in the past, but I could. Oh, I could. I shaved today, as it were, with my Harry's stuff. It's a thing I like. I'm still not getting the razor bumps. I was buying it before. When they stop doing these ads with us eventually, I will continue to use it. I'm a fan. And I also bought the company. That's Norelco. That's a whole other shaving thing. But that was also an old reference to go along with that Snagglepuss thing. No. So they stand behind the quality of all of their blades. And they know that switching razors is not an easy decision, because it's the whole system, really. I mean, every they're not interchangeable, so you got to do a whole thing, and they get that. So there's a trial offer. You go over to harrys.com/ifanboy, claim that. You're going to get the trial set that comes with everything you need. You get a weighted ergonomic handle. You get a 5-blade razor with a lubricating strip and a trimmer blade. You get a little rich lathering shave gel, and, of course, the coveted travel blade cover. So go check that out. It's a close, comfortable shave at a fair price. The basic story is they didn't like the way that the shaving monopoly was going. I don't know if it's a monopoly, but what was available in terms of folks wanting to go get a blade. So they started a new company. They went out and they bought a company, and they bought a factory in Germany. They knew that it would come down to great blades, so that's really important. And they're doing a good thing. They're selling directly over the internet, so you're going to save a little money, about $2 a blade compared to $4 or more. If you don't love your shit, your shave that you've been given, let Harry's know. Within 30 days, they're going to give you a full refund on whatever it is you got. So that is cool. And it's funny, because I seem to know a lot of people who, I guess, use electrics instead of that, and I just don't understand why you'd do that. Like, I use a beard trimmer I use electric for that, but for, like, up against the skin stuff, I don't know. And I'm not even all that hairy, so if you, like, are a really thick beard, I feel like you just want to get it right close to the thing. It's so nice to do that. Do it after the shower. That's my tip. They didn't tell me to say that, but that's when your skin softened up. My history teacher in high school told me that. I don't know why I remembered that, but I've done it ever since he said that. So again, go over to harrys.com/ifanboy and get your trial set, and let them know we sent you if you get the chance to do that. Thanks very much. Moving along. You know what we need to do? We have to go to Star Wars Corner. And this time we can just revel in Star Wars Corner, because Connor's not going to be here grousing like, oh, I don't like these Star Wars comic books. Even though I think you know, and I know, that he's a little bit curious about them. Basically, there is business going down on Mon Cal, and they've got this sort of actor character that they found at the end of the last issue, and he's supposed to impersonate a Moff. And he's actually kind of an interesting character that Karen Gillan has drummed up, where he can look and sound exactly like anybody else. So they kidnap the Moff, and they send him up there so that they can get away with some dealings. It's funny, because there's not a lot of stories where you get like a kidnapping that takes place in a bathroom on Mon Calamari. And it was an interesting story that sort of fit into the whole Star Wars mythos. And I liked that part. I liked the characterization of Princess Leia in this, and the fact that she sort of talked about how she's really well known, and she can't just be seen anymore. So she can't, like, take part in the undercover part. Han Solo dialogue was pretty good in here. The C-3PO, whereas Jason Aaron excelled at Han Solo dialogue, Karen Gillan excels at C-3PO dialogue. I'm going to leave that right there. I don't want that to come off as an insult, but it does. Apparently, Salvador LaRocca, they really like him on here. The sales have been good, so it's not putting anybody off. Oh, and there's a big fish in this. And if I know anything about Star Wars, the last page big fish, there's probably going to be a bigger one. Because that's the rule. There is always a bigger fish. So there's a really big, scary fish here, and if they had been paying attention to what had come before them in the prequels, then they would know that there's going to be another big fish that comes up. So there is that. Salvador LaRocca does draw really good sort of spaceships and cannons and robots and stuff. It's just the faces are not right. Sorry, I'm looking at it right now, and I have feelings about it, and they're not good feelings, really. Hey, guess what? I didn't finish some of the other two books because I wrote them in a different place. This is the kind of thing that doesn't happen when Connor's around. Connor is he's tight-fisted. He's on top of things. He makes sure the trains run on time. I skirt by a lot. I know it's shocking. You're not gonna suspect that from the way that I do things. But here we are. So let's talk about I Hate Fairyland number 18. This is basically Gert was dead, and then they have to bring her back because the queen, who was the nice queen, turned into the evil queen, and she's going to destroy Fairyland, and we know that Gert is the only one that can take care of her. So we spent this whole time with this, not FedEx, but whatever their FedEx equivalent, Fairyland Express delivery equivalent is, the little kid who dresses as a dragon, but can also breathe fire, because he is a dragon, and he goes to find Larry the Fly, because they need to go and get Gert. And it was fun and fun and entertaining, and if you like Scotty Young's work, it's exactly what you expect of it. We're ramping up to a big confrontation as they bring Gert back from the dead, and that'll probably be fun. But she wasn't in this at all, so they didn't have to rely on her as sort of the linchpin of the humor, I guess, in it. He's good, just like the other ones. And then finally, we have Sex Criminals number 23. This is a thing that people are like, I read off and on. And I got back in, and I missed a little bit of it, but I want to like it a lot, but I don't always like it, and I'm not sure sometimes whether it's good or titillating, and so I don't know why I'm reading it. It's a little sad right now, and it's sort of like everybody's a little depressed and in between storylines, almost. Like, all the characters are trying to figure out what to do, and we're waiting for them to realize what's up next, and then they always have to introduce some other person with some weird sex power, which is what we have here. And I don't know what he's doing, but he's using his sex power to have some orgasm with some machine and then manipulate the stock market. I don't know. I don't know what's going on. I'm getting close back to the point where I think I would stop reading this, but then I always end up sort of reading it again and wondering what it is I'm missing. It's not a great pull quote, right? I always end up reading again, wondering what it is I'm missing. But that's what I said. It's how I feel. You will have to deal with that. So every week we do a patron pick, also a patron pick, and where the patrons, the folks who support the website and the podcast, vote on a book that they would like me to read. And this week, I was quite surprised that this came out. We have Frank Miller writing and drawing a sequel to 300, Xerxes: The Fall of the House of Darius and the Rise of Alexander. This is the first part of the issue. It's colored by Alex Sinclair. And it is Frank Miller doing a Greek story. This is the, if I know my history, thanks to Dan Carlin and his Hardcore History podcast, if I know it, then what happened was Xerxes attacked Greece and had some initial successes, but was repelled. And they went away, and the Greeks were like, we did it. And then Xerxes was gone. And then Darius, the new king of the Persians, went back with a much bigger army and then did take it over. And I think this is still the first one where they're going to get repelled. Because it's funny, because even though they win, they're going to lose. So this is more about the Athenians, not the Spartans that were featured in the movies and in the last book. Now, as I am completely uninformed about pretty much everything that's going on, I didn't know that this was a thing until very recently. And I think I was pleasantly surprised. You know, historically, like, I always said that 300 was my favorite Frank Miller for a long time. For most of the time, you know, the early days, early, let's say the first 10 years of doing this show, I would have said that this was my favorite book. And then he, you know, said things and did things that were not really concurrent with, I think, would be my worldview, and everybody sort of turned against them. And then he did The Holy Terror, and everybody turned against him further. And then he turned in some work that wasn't great. And I think people soured on it, and they looked at some of the, I guess what would be considered, not homophobia is not the word, but sort of like there's a toxic form of masculinity in this book, or in the original book, that I think people didn't like. And it was exacerbated by the movies. But I also think that it fits in with the types of characters that he was trying to write and that he's always written, and that it's a view of what these people might have been like if you were looking at it through a contemporary lens. So I don't think it's all that harmful of a source material, but I think that it has sort of soured historically. That being said, it's really good. Like, 300 is really great. It's a beautiful looking book. It spawned an entire wave of ridiculously ugly movies, but I wouldn't hold that against it necessarily. Lynn Varley colored the original, and this is colored by Alex Sinclair. You know, and it feels like reading 300. It feels like reading 300 as written and drawn by Frank Miller, which, that's not an unspecial thing. I don't think, I don't know if people are able to appreciate Frank Miller, his contribution, if you haven't been around a really long time, if he's just somebody. I mean, but he was, I'm almost going to say as important as Jack Kirby. That's not true. But in terms of that shift, a seismic shift in how comic books were supposed to be, there's, you know, nobody had a bigger impact at that time than Frank Miller. I would say even more so than Alan Moore. And they both dealt with a shift in 1986 in changing the tone of things. But Frank Miller put a visual style to go along with it. And the visual style, it was both modern and classic. It borrowed from Japanese influence. It borrowed from American influence. And it's solely his own. Nobody draws like Frank Miller. Frank Miller is instantly recognizable. And the point is, in this new series, Frank Miller's drawn like a son of a bitch. This is good. It's just straight up good. We saw those pictures of him a couple years ago, and he just looked like he was on death's door, and I'd heard that much from other people, but this is good-looking work. It's simpler than it used to do, but that's the thing that happens to a lot of artists as they get older. You know, they get more economical. It's really good-looking, and it's really interesting, and I like this kind of history. I like trying to figure out where these characters are coming from. There's a couple of large shots that are not great. They're sort of wide shots of different enemies or whatever, and that aren't. But most of it is really quite good looking. The whole thing is done in spreads. So if you're reading digitally, you know, you'd be sideways. But that's just like the original book. It was done in spreads, basically. Goes across the page. I really enjoyed it. I can't wait to read more. And you know, I had to buy this one. So I'm glad I did, because I might not have otherwise if folks, because I think I fooled myself into thinking, I don't know if I like Frank Miller anymore, but that's ridiculous. He's, you know, he's great. And you know, say, you know, whatever he might think politically or have said publicly or whatever, like, I don't think that makes him a villain. And it does not take away from the fact that he is a singular and impressive talent. The guy changed things in a lasting way. Not always a good way, but what he did was good. I really dug this book. So that's Xerxes, The Fall of the House of Darius and the Rise of Alexander, number one, out from Dark Horse this week. If you haven't checked it out and you like that kind of stuff that he did before, you should. If you want to know why we did that, it's because of patreon.com/ifanboy. And when you are at any levels donating, then you get to vote on that every Wednesday through Thursday, basically. Our next stretch goal, we've made some little bit of progress, is a non-comics media podcast where we will monthly take a look at something that is not comics, and we will talk about it. So as the patrons know, that we tend to do this a lot on the patron hangouts. Another one's coming up soon, details on that to come. So if we can get to the next goal, go over there, check it out, patreon.com/ifanboy, and you can see, and then that's brought a lot of other things back, which have just created a lot of work for me, basically. There's also the t-shirt store. You can go to ifanboy.com, ifanboy.threadless.com. You can see 6 of our designs. There's a new one coming out. We are going to announce that and show it for the first time on that patron hangout that is coming up. It's on March 15th, with details to follow. but it is a new shirt, which I think you folks are really going to dig a lot. I dig it a lot. But check out what's there. And of course, if Patreon's not your thing or you don't want to buy a t-shirt or whatever, you can always go to ifamily.com/support and you can find a direct donation link to PayPal if that's the thing that you want to do. Because it's important. It's not just us, but just as a concept of if you're listening to free content that you like, everybody can use and will be helped by your support, which is minor. But if you really enjoy a thing and it's part of your life, like part of your entertainment life, I pay some stupid amount for cable that I don't watch. And so I should be, I would much rather divert those funds to people who create entertainment and content for me that means something to me, that is important. And so I do that too. Let's move along. Other thing about patrons is if you donate at $5 a month or more, you are eligible to get a patron power, right? We give you a superpower that we have thought up on the spot. Normally we split this up and today I have to do four of them. So that's on me, I suppose. So let's get through them quickly. I managed to fill up this time. I didn't think that would be a thing. Caroline Hammond has solder tip fingers. She can heat solder with the tips of her fingers and do very small electrical welding jobs. It's not enough to, like, she couldn't weld a battleship, but she can do finite electronics. I'm going to go ahead and say that she can turn it off and on. Her fingers are not always, you know, at 800 degrees, because I think that would be difficult if you had an itch, for example. Or, I mean, toilet paper is a big problem right away. But yeah, Caroline, thank you, but you have solder tip fingers, which, you know, I recommend you look at sort of boutique electronics. The guitar pedal market's pretty big. Radio control cars, you could be helpful on that kind of thing, or planes, anything with wiring. You might want to study some electronic schematics. I'm a bad solderer. That's what I know. Gerald Kavanaugh can find amazing uses for any melon. So, do you know how, like, MacGyver can MacGyver things together? Well, Gerald can do that, but only with melons and members of the melon family. But, you know, melon bombs, you build a deck for your home out of melon. Just incredibly handy with melons. Artem Vorobyev, which is a hell of a name, has tree branch hair. Tree branch hair. The instead of hair, like a normal human, there's sticks, twigs, leaves, tree branches that are coming out of the top of his head. Or her. I think it's him. Tree branch hair is what they got. And so you want to watch out for birds. Open flame. You don't want Caroline, for example, to run her fingers through your tree branch hair. I think you can see where that's going. You're going to get some scalp burn there. I had to do four. This isn't my fault. Neil Hill, next up, can apply decals perfectly. It also applies to anything sort of with a sticky surface. So if you want to think about, like, you putting a sticker on the back of your car, it's set, it perfectly aligned. It's right where you want to be. There's no air bubbles or anything like that. Protection film on your phones and devices, things like that. Children who are building the Lego sets, or adults, let's be honest, who are building the Lego system, you got to put that little sticker on that little piece. Man, Neil, right in the right spot. There's no tearing, pulling it off the sheet that it comes on. Just perfect sticker application every single time. It goes for temporary tattoos. You can do it like that. Neil can put stickers on perfectly. If you would like a dumb superpower of your own, get over to patreon.com/ifanboy. And again, at the $5 or more level, we're plowing through them. We're still back quite a ways, doing four a week. But at some point, we will catch up and we will get to yours. Everybody who gets one this week is thinking, oh man, that was a while ago. I'm so glad it came. So let the anticipation be the goal for you there, because that's fun. Also, the reason that you're doing Patreon isn't to get that. Although, if that's what your motivator is, then I'm not going to stop you. That's fine. Let's do audience questions. It looks like I got a little time left. I thought I wasn't going to make it, and now I think I'm not going to make it in time, because that's how these always go. I'm going to read two emails that are sort of related, and then I'm going to make up my answer based on almost no fact, but some experience and intuition. How does that sound, audience? Brad from Canada says, I was wondering what thoughts, if any, do you have about recent cheap, crazy Marvel trade sales in Comixology, specifically the 99-cent sales on books on same day and date of release. Does this help the industry? Does it, in the long run, hurt brick and mortar shops, or does it really have no impact at all? I've been thinking about this question since I just bought this week's new Thanos original graphic novel at a 95% discount, which is admittedly not very long. He's saying it's short, but at 99 cents, it's okay. Okay, that's one. Scott from West Virginia says, Marvel sales have been way down over the past year or so. Most attribute this to the decreased quality and the 90s-like sales gimmicks. I have been wondering if Marvel Unlimited subscriptions could be a significant part of this reason as well. I know a few people who stopped buying Marvel and now read them on the app. For me, there isn't a lot to keep me excited, so I don't mind being 6 months behind. Do you think that could be the reason? If you didn't have the show to worry about, is it something that you would consider since you're digital anyway? Hopefully, if chosen, my email doesn't elicit another old man rant from Josh. Scott, first of all, thank you for recognizing my talent. Second of all, you wouldn't have said that if it wasn't what you wanted. So don't try to step away from your responsibility here, Scott of West Virginia. I can't do a West Virginia accent, so you don't have to sit through that, unfortunately. So I think I talked about this on Twitter a little bit the other day because we were talking about pre-ordering and the direct sales market, and Connor's actually more vociferous about this than I am, but I basically feel the same way, that it's a system that exists that is not ultimately helpful. It only, like comic shops, the way that we order books 2-3 months in advance only allows people to, who are already know what they're doing, to pre-order comics, and those are the people supporting it. It's certainly the indie market, that's the case, which is problematic because stores can't afford to keep stock that they don't know people are going to buy because it's non-returnable. So that's the thing. This is all going to come back to what they were talking about. And historically, although the history is not that long, the major publishers have kept pricing on digital books the same as the pricing on physical copies. And this 99-cent sale thing is sort of the first major break from something like that. But it was a protectionist measure. It absolutely was. They wanted to keep the retailers happy for a couple of reasons. Retailers have they're walking a thin line, staying in business, a lot of them. And if the publishers undercut retailers digitally, then people are going to have less reason to go there. And then if the stores die, then the publishers are going to die, and they can't have that. So that's why we have the artificially hiked Comixology pricing. Basically, you're paying $4 for a digital version or $4 for a physical version. Now, you could say, if you weren't thinking about the cost that goes into anything or whatever, that you are paying for the content regardless of the method. The content is the same, and that's who's getting paid. And I can get behind that to a certain extent because, you know, the creators, the artists, the writers, the letters, the colors, those are the talent, and that really is the bulk of the overhead that comes from comics outside of printing. And if you make digital cheaper and they don't sell enough physical issues and the shops go away and then the publishers go away, then nobody's going to be able to make comics. So it isn't just a matter of greedy comic book stores. It's a whole extremely fragile ecosystem, I think. Why are sales down? I don't know. I don't know. I think that all of these things have to do with it. I think the people's... I mean, why are sales down? Is it because Marvel's not very good? No, Marvel's, you know, it's a cycle. Sometimes Marvel's really good. Sometimes DC's really good. Sometimes they're both really shitty. They both put out books that are really good, and they both put out a bunch of books that are not really good. And there are people who have been around to buy them, and they will. But the world, she's a-changing. This is the old man rant. So does the 99 cent thing, I'm going to get to that. I'm going to come back around. Maybe. I don't know. No one's here to remind me if I don't. So you'll know at home. You're like, you didn't talk about that thing, but here we go. 99 cent thing. That feels like an experiment to me. They've got this stock sitting around and they think, well, what if we do this? Can we make money on it? Is it going to change the book sales? They're probably experimenting. They probably want to know. I don't think they know. I don't know how many of any of those things that they sold. So it's hard to say what the effect is, but it seems like an experiment. And sometimes maybe making books 99 cents, they know they can move a lot of units. And that is, if they're not projecting the revenue from the digital into their costs model for print, then it's gravy. Unless they end up cannibalizing, their print sales, in which case they won't do that. I think they're trying to find out. I have held for a long time that at cost parity, the digital customers and the print customers are not necessarily the same people. So I don't know. I think there'll be some overlap and cannibalization. And eventually people will go all, you know, digital will eventually be the main thing. People will always buy print, but slowly that ratio will shift. But it's slow and it's going to be a generational change, I think, more than anything. But, you know, they don't know. And they're trying all sorts of things. But now they are finally pushing back. Like, maybe we can make a little bit of money if we make some of these comics cheaper. But they're not going to do that with the issues, I don't think. I don't see that happening. Some publishers might, and they might in a sort of small instance. But by and large, like, I get why they're the same price. And I think it sucks, kind of. I think it kind of sucks. But the whole system sucks. And that's why it's duct tape and baling wire. Why are people not buying comics? That's a good question. I think that there's a glut of content and everybody is so constantly hit by the fire hose of stuff coming at them that it becomes difficult to stick with one thing or another without, you know, and still have any time to sleep or breathe or do whatever. And comics are losing in the attention wars. Not from a cultural standpoint. From a cultural standpoint, comics have never been held in a favorable light, but in terms of actual eyeballs, revenue, time, and attention, less so. So it's like you can be a person who influences everything, but it doesn't mean that somebody's buying your bananas. I think that there's a little of that going on. I mean, the problem is, you know, comics is still me. I've been at this, you know, I've been at this for 20 years. I've been doing the website since 2000. A lot of you guys are still with me. People come along, but they still seem a lot like me. It's not a lot of 16-year-olds, like, ever, you know. At least the traditional comics, you know, the people buying comics, they're making, but it's not replacing that sort of adult collector thing. I don't know. It'll probably shoot back up the other way, but I mean, I really think like it's gonna die. And in order to be reborn, it has to burn down. And these are all parts of that equation. These are all parts of that question. I don't know the answer. I don't know there is an answer. I think that a lot of people are going to get hurt when it happens. And it's happened slowly. And some people, like, it is harder than ever to make a career out of being a comic book artist or writer. You can get read. You can get known. You can get attention. But making a career, a long-term, lifelong career, a Dan Jurgens or a Walt Simonson who's worked in comics their whole life, you know, there's not a retirement plan that you're going to keep doing it. You've got to stay relevant over a long period of time. And I don't know that there's a support system for that. The people who are around were smart. They work hard and they were lucky. And they were probably delightful to work with. A lot of people left in the wake. But any industry changes and people in it have to weather changes. I just feel like there's a lot of risk in comics like that. You know, some people do very well, but that's not the majority. Other people are just working class artists almost, middle class if they're lucky. So does that count as an old man rant? Is that a thing? I don't know. I talked about old man. I don't think I was ranting. There was not a nasal snort that I heard. Carl from Berkeley writes in and says, "This is about The Boys. I recently picked it back up in trades after dropping it in issues once the second arc ended way back in 07 or 08. That's over a decade ago. I want to say I'm hankering for Ennis's writing after getting my girlfriend into Preacher, thumbs up, and wanted to see if I could get past the initial shock value ugliness of the first few arcs to see if any of that actually pays off. And I have to say, I'm on the fourth trade now and I'm very, very into it. The book finally seems to have the soul, and Ennis and Robertson are in a groove with the character's world, and they're feeling fully formed." Which brings me to our question. Josh, did you finish The Boys? If not, how long did you last? Any thoughts on the upcoming adaptation? I honestly could care less. Seems too little too late. Good question. I didn't finish it. I probably dropped off about the same time that you did, and I felt the same way. A lot of that stuff has to do with how I'm feeling at a given time or how much I want to be spending on comics or doing whatever. And so I didn't read The Boys for all that long. And I have heard that after I left, it got a lot better. But then it seemed so daunting that I never went back and did it. So I have no doubt. Like, at some point, I went back and I read all of the Authority Kev issues that Ennis wrote. And, like, I didn't like those when they first came out. But as I stuck with it, I read them all at once. That might be a key with Ennis for me. Like, you got to kind of do it all at once. Everything was in there that I love about Garth Ennis. And so I have no doubt that The Boys is that thing. He stuck with it for long enough. What was it, 60 issues or something like that? That there's no way that it fell off or would have been like, I'm completely sure that it's worth reading. Even though at the time I didn't, I think, which was a mistake on my part, but I was younger. I made mistakes then. Yeah, but it's just a thing that I haven't done. I would like to read it, but I would like to read Preacher again. I would like to read a lot of things. I would like to read any of the 90 books that I've stacked up over on my shelf. But I got to do this show, and that takes up a lot of time. But honestly, if I wasn't doing this show, then I'd like to read it at some point. Upcoming adaptation, I don't know. I just saw that Carl Urban has been cast in it. I was like, all right, that works. I think Carl Urban's rad. I don't know why he's not a big star. I mean, I'll check it out. But at the same time, I didn't watch more than 2 episodes of Preacher. It's my favorite comic book of all time. I watched 2 episodes of the series. I heard that it got better. But that didn't make me want to jump back in for some reason. So I don't know if there's too little too late on that one, but nah. I mean, maybe if it's great or I have some reason to check it out. I don't know anything about it. If you would like to have your email answered, you can write to us at contact@ifanboy.com. Thank you for everyone who does that all the time. Do I ever actually say thank you for those emails? I feel like I should, because we've gotten emails consistently for like 1,000 years, and they're really like one of my favorite parts of the show to do. Have I ever said that? I really thank you for everybody who writes in. They're not all good. I'm not saying you all did a good job. That would be... Some of you are bad at it. Some of you are good at it. And some of you write a lot. But I appreciate it nonetheless. And by the way, bad at it, that's subjective. Your question might be fine, but it might make a shitty question for the podcast. But you can't know until you write, and I probably won't tell you that it was shitty. Unless it makes it onto the show, in which case it was shitty, but it was something good because it made it onto the show. And that's kind of what you're looking for, just like the other guy who wanted that old man rant. I know how this works. You can listen to the Booksplode podcast that Connor and I did on Green Lantern Earth 1, the original graphic novel from Gabe Hardman and Karina Becko that came out recently. That's there. Be sure to show up for our next patron hangout, which is Sunday, April 15th at 9 p.m. Eastern. I double-checked that date before I wrote it, but now I'm doubting it. Sunday at 9 p.m., April 15th, where you will then see our new shirt. That we'll tease that. People there will be the first to see it. That's good, right? That's a thing. Get over to ifanboy.com. You can find all of our podcasts, every special edition, every Talksplode. I got a Talksplode coming up this month. I think I got my guest. It's going to be good. You can find out what the pick of the week is before the show comes out by liking us on facebook.com/ifanboy or following us on @ifanboy on Twitter. You can follow me individually @JFlanagan on Twitter and Instagram. And C.S. Kilpatrick is on Instagram. He's really not on Twitter or Facebook anymore. And God bless him for it. I think that was the right call. If you like this show, you can leave us a review on iTunes. Our show, any show, it's good to do that. Better yet, tell your friends all about us. Introduce your mom to podcasts. That is actually written with a question mark on our thing there. And help spread the iFanboy love. I'm just reading what it said there. I'm Josh, and hopefully next week, I'm told that Connor will be back with me, and you won't have to do this. How did we do? I think it could have been better. I think it could have been funnier. But I don't know. I can't tell what you're laughing at. I got nobody to bounce anything off of. I hope you liked it. I had fun doing it. Always a pleasure, everyone. Thanks. This episode is brought to you by BetterHelp. How's your social battery doing right now? I've never used that phrase, but I instantly know what it means. And I think it's interesting because it works 2 different ways. Some people need to have their social battery charged, and they this is the introvert extrovert thing. And some people, you know, like they've got enough energy for other people, but then it's time to sort of step away. And, you know, as we get to this part where winter is ending,
which again, it's opposite. I love winter. I don't need it to end. You know, you start getting together with more people and it can be a little draining on top of every other thing that we all have going on in our lives. I just assume everybody's overburdened because I think everybody's overburdened, but it can be tough to deal with. And also one of the things is like, you can't necessarily understand why you feel that way or why it's making you tired, but it's a real thing. If you think that you could use some help with it, if you could figure out a way to make things better, therapy is a great way to help. It can give you that kind of self-awareness to know how to ride that level just right so that you feel good, you feel right. If you're thinking of starting therapy, you can give BetterHelp a try. It is entirely online. It is designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule, which is, again, we've been talking about being busy, right? You got to fit that in. You got a lunch period. You can do it during that time, whichever. That's possible. You fill out a brief questionnaire and get matched with a licensed therapist. You can switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. I like that. There is no penalty for finding the person who is right for you. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/iFanboy today. Get 10% off of your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.com/iFanboy.